This is Dr. Tim, detective, to bring you, by transcription, the mystery of the guest in number two. Being a combination of doctor and detective gets pretty rugged sometimes, and this was one of those times, all right. The guest in number two, we called him. Jill, that's my landlady's daughter, first called him to my attention.
Mom's your friend in number two. You know, the room up on the second floor. To the doggondest guy.
I remember you thought I was the doggondest guy when I moved in here and set up a laboratory for crime detection and medical work.
Well, but Sandy thinks so too, don't you, Sandy?
Yeah, I think maybe he's a criminal in hiding.
I'm afraid you kids have developed unnatural suspicions from helping me out with some of my cases.
Well, anybody that says his name is Jones, then...
Now, look. Some people really are named Jones. Several hundred thousand of them, I presume, and...
If that's his name, then why are all his suitcases marked with R.W.M.?
Sure, every one of them. Stamped in gold letters.
None of our business, kids. Boy, your mother'd skin you alive, Jill, if she knew you were prying into the luggage of a paying customer. And as for you, Master Sandy, it might be smart for you to confine your detective work to your own premises and not in other people's houses, right?
Right.
Oh, okay, I guess. But I still think it is darn good.
I wish now I'd paid more attention to Sandy and Jill in the matter of the stranger in number two. But you never know until it's too late. Anyway, nothing happened to break the routine of my laboratory week for a couple of weeks. Then, late one afternoon, just before dinner time, I was cleaning up my lab.
Gee, Dr. Tim, you don't mean those jars are full of real blood. Blood from people.
Exactly that, Jill.
What do you do with it?
Oh, a lot of things. Blood's a pretty useful thing. A lot more so than most people realize.
Where do you get it?
From the bank, Jill. The blood bank. And that's just what it actually is. All over the country, these banks keep blood for use whenever and wherever it's needed.
Sure, but what do you do with it?
Well, that's a long story, Sandy. But it amounts to this. For years, doctors have known that blood isn't just one thing. It's lots and lots of things. And each one of those parts or fractions of the blood can be separated from the other parts. And these are used to cure people. I'm trying to find some new blood parts or some new uses for the old ones. That's why there's always blood samples in the laboratory refrigerator, catch?
Uh-huh.
Sure. Well, I'm all cleaned up here at last. Now, what's the news?
Mom said I'd better come up and see you.
Hmm?
A professional visit, she called it. I don't feel so good today.
Symptoms?
Well, I've been pretty sick at my stomach and my eyes hurt, and I feel all kind of worn out.
Personally, I think she's just trying to get out of doing homework tonight.
I am not.
Well, let me take a look, Jill. I'll stick out your tongue. Uh-huh. They are. Sandy.
Yes, Dr. Tim.
Hand me that thermometer, will you?
Sure.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll keep it in your mouth for a while, Jill.
Now, Dr. Tim.
Yes?
You know that guy Jones upstairs?
Oh, I wouldn't say I know him, Sandy. We've spoken in the hall.
Well, I know you told us to lay off, but the doggonest thing happened just a few minutes ago while I was waiting by the stairs for Jill.
Ah, the curse of an overactive imagination. Go on.
Anyway, he came in with this other man right behind him, and Dr. Tim, I'd swear that other guy had a gun in his overcoat pocket, was pushing it right up against this Jones guy's back. They didn't see me because...
I didn't have time to laugh because just at that moment, from right overhead, came the sound of a fight. And then something else. A shot. For a moment, we stood there paralyzed. It wasn't until I heard a crash of glass and saw a figure hurtle past my window and streak it over the back fence and up the alley that I could move. And by the time that we reached the upstairs room, it looked as if we'd arrived too late. The mysterious Mr. Jones was lying on the floor with a pool of blood beside him. He'd been shot. Shot right through the back. Looking back on it afterwards, I don't know what I'd have done without those kids. There wasn't anybody else in the house, and if I ever needed six hands, I needed them then. Sick as she was, Jill just gulped and said,
"Holy gee, is he dead?"
He wasn't quite, but it was a matter of moments. Gunshot wounds can be pretty nasty, and where there's loss of blood, you always have shock to contend with, and shock can be mighty serious in itself. Sandy didn't have to be told. In a flash, he was downstairs and back with my medical bag. One word to Jill, the word police, sent her flying to a telephone, and I knew an ambulance and help would be on the way at once. Meantime, the mysterious Mr. Jones was in the hands of God and a doctor. I hoped I was a good doctor, and I remember asking God to help me out on that score. Jones was dying, fast. Then I remembered that blood in my laboratory. Downstairs in the lab, Jill and I worked as we'd never worked before, while Sandy kept watch upstairs over the wounded man. We didn't talk much, Jill and I, just a few quiet questions and answers.
Here's the microscope site, Dr. Jill. Are you going to get in the transfusion?
Yes. Have to check his type of blood first with a microscope. Use the wrong kind of blood and it would kill him.
Gee.
Good thing I have whole blood on hand for those experiments. He wouldn't last until they could get some here. Now, that solution, please.
Here.
Ah, this one seems to match his blood. Quick, hand me that bottle marked type O. Now, go to the sterilizer. Twenty minutes later, the ambulance arrived. Two squad cars and a dozen or so police were scouring the neighborhood for some trace of the man who had tried to murder the mysterious Mr. Jones. And as for Jones, that blood had saved his life, had replaced the vital fluid, the blood cells, and all the other chemical elements so necessary to keeping the life of a man going. Jones was still unconscious, of course, and would be for a long time yet. His condition was so serious that he couldn't even be moved to a hospital. It would have meant sure death from more loss of blood and shock. The case was out of my hands now, but I'd done my best, and I hoped my best was good enough. I sank down weakly in a chair in my laboratory. And it wasn't until I noticed Sandy and Jill, big-eyed and bursting with excitement, that I remembered the other side of the affair. Who had shot Jones, and why? Maybe I could help there, too. But one look at Jill, and I knew her heart was going to be broken. For this was one case where she was going to be out of the running. I spoke quietly. Jill.
Yes, Dr. Tim?
You're going to bed.
Oh, Dr. Tim!
Hate to do it to you, old girl, but you remember that little examination we were making?
Well, yes, but...
As your doctor, madam, I order you to bed. You have measles. A few minutes later, the house had two bed patients. One, a very sad young lady with measles. The other, a man nobody knew, who had almost been murdered. A third patient, Sandy, was standing up bravely under a light, while I stood over him with a hypodermic syringe.
What's the stuff, Doc?
Well, believe it or not, Sandy, it comes from blood, too. It's going to keep you from catching Jill's measles, or at least it'll make certain that you have a very light case and protect you for a long time afterwards.
What do you call it?
Immune serum globulin.
Well, let's skip that one, huh?
Well, you see, this stuff is one of those blood parts, fractions, I was telling you about. When you take blood from people who have had measles and separate it into its parts, this globulin...
Hey, how do you spell that one?
Well, G-L-O-B-U-L-I-N. It works wonders to keep people from getting measles from other people.
I'll take your word for it, Doc. Go ahead and shoot.
Okay.
I didn't even feel it. Am I safe now?
Perfectly safe.
Dr. Tim.
Yes?
You know, I've been watching that guy, Jones, the one that was shot. I can tell you something about him.
What?
He's loony. You know what he does?
No.
He collects rocks, believe it or not. Just common old rocks.
Well, that's a harmless pastime.
Sure got him in a mess of trouble.
Maybe you've got a point there, Sandy. But why would anybody shoot a man for collecting rocks? Unless they were gold or something.
Whoever shot him was after those rocks, all right. When you left me alone with Mr. Jones in the room upstairs, I sort of noticed that several of his suitcases had been busted open. There were rocks with labels on them scattered all over the room. I'd sure like to know why.
It must have been midnight when I decided I couldn't get to sleep and might as well do a little looking around. After what we'd all been through, I wanted to forget the mystery and relax. The police could carry on from here. But I couldn't. So I went up the stairs to where the mysterious Mr. Jones hovered between life and death. I motioned the nurse to be silent and carefully examined the room. Sandy was right. There was nothing of interest except the rocks. There were hundreds of them, all sizes and all shapes, and all neatly labeled with cryptic little stickers which said Northwest 100A or South G8, referring no doubt to some location on a map where they had been gathered. I took a couple with me to examine at leisure in the laboratory and started downstairs when I noticed a light coming from under the door to Jill's room.
Come in.
Well, sort of late for a sick girl to be reading, isn't it?
Oh, honest, I've been asleep.
Well, it's lights out now. Doctor's orders.
Okay, Doctor. How's Mr. Jones? Is he going to live?
I wish I could tell you, Jill. The use of blood has given him a chance. First the transfusion, then later maybe he'll need plasma.
What's that?
Oh, plasma's another part of blood, Jill. It can be stored indefinitely and won't spoil as quickly as whole blood. You use it when you don't need the red cells of the blood, just the liquid part.
Gee, blood is sure wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, Dr. Jim, what are you doing with those rocks in your hand?
Oh, these? Well, they're from Mr. Jones' room. Seems to be a lot of them up there.
Are they anything special?
I don't know, Jill. Sandy mentioned them, and I thought...
Gee whiz. I'll bet I know what they are. I was reading in the paper tonight. Everybody's out looking for them.
For what?
Well, gosh, I forget what you call it. The prospectors go out with some kind of electric machines, and they...
I just stood there with my mouth hanging open. What a dope I'd been. It took two kids to tell me what I should have seen from the very first moment. Without even saying goodnight to Jill, I dashed down the stairs, picked up the telephone, and called the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This was a case for the G-Men. It took a couple of weeks before the case was cleared up. My hunch, thanks to the work of Sandy and Jill, had been right. Jones had been prospecting for uranium, the vital mineral for atomic energy and research. Jones told us the whole story later, how he was prospecting for the government, which badly needed new supplies of uranium, how he'd been forced at the point of a gun to give up his map and then brutally shot. The G-men caught the man all right, but never gave out the whole story of who was behind the robbery and the attempted murder. But it wasn't anyone working for the good of this country. Jones had really found uranium, too, and the mine is being worked today, thanks to Sandy, to Jill, and to a mysterious substance known for thousands and thousands of years as blood. This is Dr. Tim Detective, saying so long until next week at this same time, when Sandy, Jill, and I will dip into my casebook and bring out a brand new transcribed story, The Mystery of the Man from Trouble Creek.
Hope that you've enjoyed this recording, and for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.